And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today we're going to be talking about the bees, yes, the honeybees, the hive, the Borg, and the Illuminati. That's a lot of talk about in 60 minutes, isn't it? The bees, the honeybees, the hive, that's where they live, the Borg, and the Illuminati. We're going to really be talking about Mormonism and Masonry according to Lucifer. Not according to Tex Mars or Freemasons or the Mormon Church, but according to Lucifer. Because really it's Lucifer's doctrine. I mean, he's put all these doctrinal accoutrements, you might say, to use a big word, together in these last days. And he's put them together for one of his churches. Now, there are a number of church organizations and let's just say the overall Church of Satan, and there is a Church of Satan, and it has many branches. One of them is the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Another one is the Jehovah's Witnesses. These are two big organizations. Neither of one really worship Jesus, but they're quite large, and one of them, the Mormon Church, is said to be the fastest growing religion in the world. It has 10 or 15 million members. That's just in the United States. And they've gotten so huge that they almost own a state, Utah. And they had one of their own to be virtually the president of the United States, Mitt Romney. And we need to know a little bit about Mormonism, about the Mormon Church. Now, I know quite a bit about the Mormon Church, quite a bit. I've studied the Mormon Church for many years. I began really as a young man. I was in the Air Force, and I had a friend. He was a security policeman. I was single at the time. I lived in the dormitory, and he'd come down to my room, and he'd try to convince me to become a Mormon. And, of course, I just laughed at him and all that, but he was a good friend of mine, so one day I said, why don't I go to your church? Oh, he was delighted. So we went down to the big church there in Lubbock, Texas, where I was stationed at Reese Air Force Base. I'll have to tell you some things about Reese Air Force Base. One of these days, Reese Air Force Base up in Lubbock, Texas. And I went to church with him because I wanted to see what it was like. I wanted to see what this demonic system was like. Well, of course, they didn't let me go to the important service, but it was a service as such, and oh, they talked about a little bit of nothing. I think there were well over 1,000 people there, and then they had communion, and I was laughing because they had communion. They had bread and just broke it into pieces. Didn't have unleavened bread, you know, communion-type bread. They just got a loaf of bread, opened it up, and broke it into pieces. And then they had a glass of water, and that represented the wine. So water and bread. That's bread and water, you know. That's what we had there that night. At least I didn't have it, but I passed on the thing, and, you know, my friend took it. So that was the extent of what I learned about the Mormon Church. Really nothing. Not much. So I went to the books, got to the books, began to study. One of the books that I studied was Ed Decker. He's a good friend of mine now. Ed Decker and Dave Hunt's book, The Godmakers, a shocking expose of what the Mormon Church really believes. The Godmakers. I found that book quite interesting. I read it first about 30 years ago, and I found it quite interesting because, well, the title, think of it, The Godmakers. What does that mean? Well, it means exactly what it says. They make gods of men. But didn't we have the prime example of that in the Garden of Eden? When Lucifer or Satan, told Eve and then later Adam, if you eat of this, you know, this forbidden fruit from the wrong tree, then you'll become, you know, God knows, you'll become like a god. And boy, they went and ate of it, didn't they? And they did not become as a god. No, they were banished from the garden. And then bad things began to happen. They took upon themselves sin. They had no sin before, but they had been told by God, you can eat anything, but don't do anything to this tree. Don't eat of this tree. And Satan said, surely has God said, he questions, you see. Surely, did God tell you that? Have you ever been told such a thing? Well, my daddy said I can't. Did your dad say that? That doesn't matter. Who is he to say that? Well, you probably found out that your dad was a pretty important person in your life, didn't you? When you did it. Well, I think Adam and Eve found out some big things when they were banished from the garden and they had to begin to work. Began to work from the sweat of their brow. So, that set in motion a terrible chain of events. And we today have original sin. That's called original sin. Now, the Mormons say that Adam and Eve did a good thing when they took of the forbidden fruit. When they disobeyed God, they did a good thing. Because they, Adam and Eve, began the pathway to godhood for humanity. But did they really? No, of course not. They began the pathway of hell. Lucifer enjoyed it. He enjoyed deceiving Adam and Eve because he realized that he had a little bit of chance. There he was on earth, and Adam and Eve were the only man and woman, and he could do what he thought he could get in there. He could get, you know, and do some good, boy. Well, he did that. Of course, you know, I could go on a little bit further. God told Satan, well, since you've done there, Lucifer, since you've done that, I'm going to make you a serpent. And he became a serpent. And there we have, from the beginning of time, Satan in the form of a serpent or a serpent dragon. That's what we picture Satan as. A serpent-like dragon. Okay, so that's what Satan told Adam and Eve. Surely did God say that? And go ahead and take of it. Surely you won't die. And it just turned into a horrible thing. Now, I've always learned from my New Age days, from studying the New Age movement, that the New Age loved the story of Adam and Eve. They, you know, in fact, there's a book out by Matthew Fox, a New Age priest. Original, I forget exactly what the title is, but has a cover on the front. An apple that was bitten into. Oh, yes, I remember the exact title now. Father Matthew Fox. He was a Catholic priest, became an Episcopal priest. It was called Original Blessing, not sin, but an original blessing. Well, we were blessed because that gave man knowledge. He suddenly had gnosis or knowledge, and he could proceed on, if he could, through higher consciousness into godhood. That's the New Age lie, of course. Now, the Mormon Church also taught this lie. That there is no such thing as original sin, and that Adam and Eve, in obeying Lucifer, did the right thing. And there's so much more. Now, there are a number of symbols in the Satan Church, the Church of Satan, which is the Church of Mormon and the Jehovah's Witnesses and other such organizations. And I'll talk to you about those things today so that you'll understand their meaning. Now, first of all, we have to understand that in the Mormon theology, Joseph Smith, who was the founder, was a Freemason. And he learned from the Freemasons many things. One of which was that the planet Sirius was where God is. The planet, or star, I should say, not planet, Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S. But he called that Kolob. So if you want to know where God is today, you just point to the star called Kolob. But Kolob, according to Kevin Barney and other serious Mormon researchers, is in fact Sirius. I was reading a book by a man named John Gee, G-E-E, and it's also held in common with other LDS scholars, Mormon scholars, that says Kolob is derived from the Semitic root K-L-B, which means dog, which is an allusion, of course, to Sirius, because Sirius is the dog star. Now, Sirius was worshipped in ancient Egypt. When the Egyptian rains came and the Nile became very fertile and, you know, the river flooded throughout Egypt, they believed this was because of the dog star. The dog star put its magic influences, had its magical influences. And so the dog star of summer is what we know it as. Have you ever heard of the dog days of summer? Well, there you go. That comes from the Freemasons. Because the Freemasons talk much about the star Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S. Now, K-L-B is really dog. Now, here's what it really, we get down to it. But Michael D. Rhodes, in his book, The Joseph Smith Hypocephalus, 20 years later, says the word most likely derives from the common Semitic root QLB, which has the basic meaning of heart, center, middle. It's an Egyptian word. So it's part of the Arabic system. And this is the view of Rhodes and is the view also of Mormon authorities. So this is the dog star, the dog days of summer, and it's the brightest in the sky. Many people believe that Venus is the dog star. You look up into the sky, and what's the brightest star? Why, it's Venus, the dog star. Others say, no, it's a separate star. And there is, in fact, a Sirius star in the sky. And this has great meaning, believe me, in Freemasonry. They have a lot to do with the dog star, with Sirius, which is Kolob. Now, you know, the cute little Osmond brothers and sister, Marie Osmond, and of course, remember the Donnie and Marie show on TV? Well, they were Mormons, of course. And they started their own recording company, and they called it Kolob Recording Company. And they even have a hymn to Kolob. And if you go to this Mormon church enough, they have a hymn or a hymnal book, a hymn book. And in there, it's old English language, but you'll find a hymn to Kolob. They sing to Kolob. Okay? So they do believe that that's what you and I might call heaven. It's a star nearest to God. It's the brightest star in the constellation Canis Major, or the bigger dog, the bigger dog. Well, in any case, Sirius is indeed the brightest star in the night sky from the perspective of Earth. And it really comes from, as I said, from the Semitic word Kolob. And it's extremely important in Egyptian astronomy because it was at its rising that the Nile began to rise, the Nile River. And that was about, around July the 19th, on the Julian calendar, July the 19th. So you still hear that today, don't you? The dog days of summer. Isn't that around July? And men and women go out and they do bad things under the influence of Sirius. Well, in any case, we have no heaven, but we do have a planet known as Kolob or Sirius. Now, one of the other great symbols in the Mormon church, and by the way, I'm pointing this out because, you see, if Freemasonry is a satanic church, and it is, and the Mormon church is a satanic church, and it is, and the Jehovah's Witnesses is a satanic church, and it is, then they would all have common symbols, common doctrines, would they not? Of course they would. So this is why you're going to find this in Freemasonry, but you'll also find it in the Mormon church. And the Mormon church doesn't mention Satan, of course, but it's the greatest satanic revival in America. And it's an amazing thing that we would have a man for president who is a member of the Mormon church. Now, maybe we should, let's just keep on going here. Now, in the Mormon church, they reject the use of the cross. Did you know that? Now, they have their own symbols, no doubt about that. And one of the symbols is the satanic symbol. If you go to the Great Temple in Salt Lake City, by the way, that whole state was originally known as Deseret, the state of Deseret. What does the Deseret mean? It means honeybee. Deseret, the honeybee. We'll talk more about the honeybee in just a moment, how important it is in Freemasonry. I want you to understand this, that in Freemasonry and in these satanic religions, obedience is very important. You will obey. You will obey the master. You don't have any free will. You're going to obey. Now you can go out and sin all you want to. In fact, they preach liberty. They preach that liberty is the whole of the law. Do as thou wilt is the whole of the law. And you can do whatever you want to do that's sinful. But if you get an order from the master, you will obey it. You will obey it. Or you'll be severely punished. That's why the beehive is so important. You're nothing but a bee. You're just a bee, a honeybee. You go out there and get the honey and bring back to the hive, H-I-V-E. That's what honeybees do. And in Mormonism, they have the beehive. And when they left Nauvoo, N-A-U-V-O-O, Illinois, I forget the year exactly, around 1832, when the Mormons left Novo, Illinois, and went down to the state of Deseret, which means honeybee, which we know as Utah, because they had these Indians that were called the Utes, U-T-E, and that finally became the name of the state, they took on this symbol. And everywhere you turn in the new Mormon colony, let's just call it that, in Utah, Salt Lake City, all the cities around there, they had all these architectural things that were, shaped like a honeybee or a beehive. I don't mean a honeybee, but a beehive. In fact, I have a picture in front of me. It's one of this beehive symbol. And it's on Brigham Young's house in Salt Lake City. They've made it a memorial now today. So go there to visit it and you'll see the beehive. The beehive. Now, if you're curious, the beehive has many gradations. Then finally it goes to the top and it curves up to the top. And this is the beehive house. At the very top of it, there is a great beehive. It's known as the Beehive House in Salt Lake City. Now, why do they name it the Beehive House? And if you go to the temple, you'll also see the beehive as a symbol. And many places you'll see the beehive. In fact, the bee is the symbol of the state, the whole state. Its symbol is the bee. Why is that? Because they want the average person to be nothing but a bee. And as you know, bees all have to work for who? The queen bee. There is a queen bee. And they will work for her. Why do they do this? Because there is let's just say that zoologists have discovered that the female gives off a certain scent, S-C-E-N-T. And these bees take on this scent and it literally hypnotizes them. Isn't that amazing? And they go forth and do their work. They bring the honey back. They clean the queen bee's nest. They do everything they're supposed to do. They're good little worker bees. And they'll do that till they die as a worker bee. The beehive is an emblem of industry. Now, no one knows when it entered Freemasonry or Mormonism, but we know it's there. And we know the beehive is very, very important to them. Because the instant they look at the top of Brigham Young, which is one of their leaders' house in Salt Lake City, what do they see? A huge beehive. They go to the church. What do they see? The beehive. They look at the state logo. It's the beehive. And it symbolizes to them the glory of God, the glory of the queen bee. Now, you may say that the Mormons don't worship a queen. They worship the true father, don't they? No, you would be wrong. Because there's a father, but there's also a mother. Even Jesus had a queen bee. In fact, he had a number of queens. You didn't know that, did you? Well, I told you that I would surprise you a little bit maybe on this show. But the Mormons have a queen bee. And she is very important to them. Now, have you ever noticed the shape of the Washington Monument? Well, it is the shape of the obelisk. A huge 555-foot tall towering obelisk. The obelisk is a sign of Egyptian religion. The Egyptian religion. And there is a plaque on the bottom of this Washington Monument. And the plaque is devoted to guess who? It will pay homage to the insect, the honeybee, in a very interesting way. It contains an inscription that recalls the importance of bees throughout history. It states, quote, "Holiness to the Lord Deseret," meaning holiness to the Lord, the honeybee. The Lord is the honeybee. Holiness to the Lord bee. Holiness to the Lord, the honeybee. Well, yes, that's right. You know, in the ancient Greek religion, the female high priestess was called a Melissa. A Melissa. That later evolved into priestesses known as Sibyls. But isn't that interesting? The Melissa. Of course, you know, they have ladies named now, Melissa. She probably doesn't even know that that's based on the honeybee. Her name means honeybee. Then here, over here on our side of the globe, Mayan culture, the Mayans, venerated the bee. They were like bee gods. And gods in the image of the honeybee were found in the most sacred temples of the Mayans. In fact, bee hut-style structures have sprang up from Africa to Ireland. Have you ever noticed many of the structures in Africa? They're of the beehive. The early Catholic Church adopted the bee as a symbol of the Pope's authority. And in fact, the Order of the Illuminati, 1 May 1776, which, by the way, is Labor Day, isn't it? I think it is. Modern times is not Labor Day, but it is around the world, I think, 1 May. I think it's International Solidarity Day, actually. Okay. But it's the Order of the Illuminati was found by Johann Adam Weishaupt on 1 May 1776. It's the Day of the Worker. That's why, you see. And Weishaupt and his group, when they founded the Illuminati, Order of the Illuminati, or the Knowing Ones, it was called, he wanted to call it the Ardenin, the Order of the Bees. So instead of the Illuminati, they would be talking about the Order of the Bees. But after 2 years, they decided that maybe that was a little bit too pedestrian. They would not call it bees, so they call it the Order of the Illuminati. And it spread everywhere. The Order of the Bees, the Order of the Illuminati. In fact, it was Napoleon himself who popularized it. Have you ever seen some of these beautiful paintings of the guy sitting there? And if you look at very closely, you'll see behind him a great circle, which is really the satanic serpent in a circle. That circle is the same encircled serpent that the Jews use today. It's called Leviathan. And he's sitting here on this throne, and he has, in one hand, he has a spear, and it's got a hand in a certain symbolic position. In the other, it's got a bee on top. And he had many hundreds of bees, golden bees, sewn into his cape. I guess you'd call it a cape, wouldn't you? When the emperor, becomes emperor, he had these little bees sewn into it. I have a picture in front of me right here from an encyclopedia. He has on this red cape, this satanic encircled serpent behind him. And then there he has on his great sun sign going around his head. He has, as his head, he has a, I don't know what you would call it. He's enthroned with this golden sun throne. But he has all these bees sewn in. He's the head of the beehive. He's the queen bee. And so these bees have great meaning. I know down in South America, they have certain communities that they actually lock off to the people as a whole. You're just driving along and you suddenly see a community, a strange community, may have as many as 5,000 people behind a fence. And a few of these are called bees, the Order of the Beehive. Isn't that fascinating? Freemasonry uses it to this very day. So do the Mormons and other groups. Lucifer knows about it, but I guess I just never have asked him. Have you, my friends? I don't really care much about what he has to say. Well, we'll go into a little bit more what the Mormons' symbology is, what the meaning of it is, what Satan's church is all about when we return right here on Power of Prophecy. Hello again, friends. Tex Mars here. We're so glad to offer various books to you. And one of the books we like to offer is Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. You've heard about my new book, which tells you about Israel, the Jews, everything you'd want to know about Judaism, the meaning of the six-pointed star. and much more. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It was Rabbi Moses Hasud that said that the six-pointed star is very significant. In fact, he said that 666 as a number has very lofty messianic potential. That's one of the highest rabbinical sources. The number 666 has lofty messianic potential. Of course, it would have to, because we know that the Antichrist will be a Jew. He will take the number 666. He will be the Messiah of the Jews, so-called. And all of this is found in my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. I want you to have your copy of this book for $25. Please add $5 shipping and handling, a total of $30. Send it to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. Or you can go to the website, powerofprophecy.com, and order from there, powerofprophecy.com. Or during the work week, just phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. That's 1-800-234-9673. Now let's return to my program today. We're talking about, well, the beehive, the bees, the Borg, and the Illuminati. It's really Mormonism and Masonry according to Lucifer. Yeah, I'm teaching you according to Lucifer today. Even though I don't know anything about Lucifer other than what the Bible says about him. I don't need to know more than that. You know, somebody once asked me, how can I know more about Satanism? I said, well, read the Bible. I'd like to read all those books. Don't read those books. Just read the Bible. That's enough. That tells you where Satan, how he got started, and where he's going, what his final destiny is. That's all you need to know. How he came down and tried to tempt the Lord Jesus Christ. And that failed. And how he sort of stuck. The book of Revelation says, well, he's going to be cast down. And that's it. That's his destiny. And it says in the last days that he's furious because he knows he has only a short time. And folks, that's what's happening today. That's why we have, you know, these horrible incidents like these 20 kids and six teachers being killed in Newtown, Connecticut. It's because of this horrible situation that we've got. Lucifer has come down. He is right here now. He has come down on us. The Bible says that in a certain period of time, Lucifer comes upon us with a horrible, I don't know how to describe it, but everywhere you turn today, don't you think things are worse than Sodom and Gomorrah? They really are. I mean, God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah for a lot less than we do here today. But let's go back to the Mormon Church. Recently reading an article in the ChicagoRealEstateDaily.com, you can see I read a lot of strange material for fun and profit. From the ChicagoRealEstateDaily.com, about a Mormon church plan for River North in downtown Chicago. It's part of a larger push into major cities across the country where membership is on the rise. Now, they're going to spend more than $10 million to construct a six-story, 39,000-square-foot building. Why did I know that? Six stories, 39-square-foot building. That would jive really good with, you know, the Freemasonry doctrines. You have six stories and you have 39,000 square feet. You kick out the numbers and numerology, you have 39, the number 39. 3 times 9 equals 27. 2 plus 7 equals 9. 9 equals 6 plus 6 plus 6. How do you get that? Well, count it up. 18 and 1 plus 8 equals 9. It just goes circular, doesn't it? In any case, it says, founded in upstate New York in 1830, the LDS Church, or Mormon Church, has grown to become the fastest growing religious group in the U.S., gaining approximately 2 million members in the U.S. between 2000 and 2010, according to the 2010 U.S. Religion Census. As of December 31st, membership topped 14.4 million people worldwide. How do you get 14.4 million to be so deluded and so stupid that they would become Mormons? Well, you know, I used to teach at the University of Texas. And they had many, many hundreds and hundreds of professors. And most of them were deluded. And they were ignorant. I mean, it's just true, folks. You don't need a doctorate for someone to tell you that you're really ignorant. I walked around and I was in the pleasure dome of ignorance. I mean, that's what I was at the University of Texas at Austin. When the Illuminati was founded, the people that first founded the Illuminati back in the 1700s were really great scholars. I mean, Adam Weishaupt was of the University of Ingolstadt. He had been a Jesuit scholar. In the world standards, he was a very bright and intelligent man. Well, he had a lawyer friend named Franz Zwack, Z-W-A-C-K. And in 1776, the order was founded. But in 1779, 3 years later, it was renamed the Order of the Illuminati. It was, that was its name. And Adam Weishaupt wanted to name the Order of the Bees, the Order of the Bees, but decided in the end to keep it the Order of the Illuminati. By the way, this is from the Collected Original Writings of the Illuminati Order, Munich, 1787, page 320. I have a lot of strange books in my library. As you can imagine, folks, I do a lot of critical thinking and planning to see what goes on. Now, but let's go back to the beehive again, shall we? This beehive is very, very important. Did you know the beehive is very important in many of these satanic groups? For example, take the Priory of Zion. Now, the man who's sort of the secretary of the Priory of Zion is a man named Plantard, from France. And Plantard was asked, what do you do? I mean, and the reporter meant for a living. Well, he worked for the civil service, sort of an administrator. But he answered, I'm a beekeeper. He had nothing to do with bees. He answered, I'm a beekeeper. Now, he really wasn't a beekeeper, but I guess he was in a certain sort of way. In a beehive, you have the queen bee who feeds, reproduces, and, well, she basically controls the hive and every bee in it. And they are required to do what she says. She even emits a pheromone, that's P-H-E-R-O-M-O-N-E. That's that scent I was telling you about. That's fed to, or I guess, every drone. That's why they call them their drone, their worker bees in the hive, picks up. It overrides their natural functions, and it essentially hypnotizes them. They say now they're trying to discover the pheromones, which dictate men's passion and women's passion. You may have seen that. They say they have perfumes now that have these pheromones in it, and you put a little bit of this perfume on you as a woman, and men are just, they come to you in droves. They can't help themselves. It's like, just drawn to you. I mean, they're just moved towards you. Doesn't matter what their natural function is, they've got to have you. Of course, this is sort of silly, but I guess in the beehive it works, doesn't it? They all want to do whatever the queen bee wants them to do. And the queen bee has always been the boss. Now, we know we've studied about the king of all of these societies, but there's always been the queen right with them. In fact, in the movie Rosemary's Baby, if you'll remember that very poignant, very pitiful scene in which they're all waiting in the room in the Gothic apartment house building in New York City, there's three knocks on the door. And then the elder of the satanic cult opens the door. And in walks a little old lady. That's surprising, isn't it? A little old lady. And right behind her comes Satan himself, ready to do his job, ready to impregnate the young Mia Farrow. That's what the movie's all about, of course. He has sex with Mia Farrow, and then, you know, she spawns the, or has, the devil's baby, Rosemary's baby. And her name Rose was very important. And the rose is extremely important. It belongs to the woman. And the rose, well, it has a meaning beyond, well, let's just say it has to do with the lady's genitals. That's the meaning of the rose. But why the old woman coming in first? She is the crone in witchcraft. She's the old woman. But he has sex with a young woman. She's going out. The young woman's coming in. That's what it's all about, you see. She's the queen mother. In the various satanic societies of Europe today, they have a queen bee. When I was in the Air Force, I've told you this before, and I worked at the chapel, I found that the Catholic priest had certain candles on the altar. And I mean, the candles were in use for everybody. They were the same candles. But on their altar, they wanted to make sure that they had candles that were exactly 44% beeswax. And I asked the priest, he was a member of some order, I asked him, well, why do you have to use this particular, type of candle? Why does it have to be 44% beeswax? They're more expensive. You can get a paraffin candle quite cheaply, but it costs twice as much for a beeswax candle. And the Catholic priest was befuddled about this. He didn't really know. I said, you don't know? You know, you're the priest. You're supposed to be able to. He said, well, I guess I missed that day in seminary or whatever. I really don't know. And he really didn't know. He was a nice enough fella. And I was determined to learn why they wanted 44% beeswax. Well, you get to the book, The Two Babylons, which we offer here in the ministry. The Two Babylons. It's a book you've got to have, friends. If you don't have The Two Babylons, I'm telling you, you're going to be missing out. The Two Babylons, a great book. Let me warn you right now, it was written like in 1830. It's an old book by Bishop Alexander Hislop. He was at the Church of England back then, and he wrote this great book. Listen, folks, back then the men were men. And they wrote stuff. I mean, you know, they were for Jesus Christ. They were for Christ. And this book will tell you that the symbols of the Catholic Church are the same as the symbols for ancient mystery Babylon. In the Babylon religion, that's exactly what you'll see in the Catholic Church today. And the symbols were basically the same in 1832, whenever it was this book was written, as they are today. And there it told me all about the candles of the Catholic Church, why they were made out of beeswax, why the number 44. It's because the number 44 indicates the four corners of the earth, and 4 plus 4 equals 8. And one of the ways they identified the queen was the number 8. You see, the number 7 is the perfect number of God, and 8 adds on to it. It's after God is finished, the queen takes over. She comes as the new order of the ages. Well, that's the meaning of the beeswax. I found that out from that book and many other things besides in that fantastic book. Okay, we've done enough on the beehive. I think we have, haven't we? I've told you about the Deseret. By the way, I get a newspaper sometimes called the Deseret News. One time it described the symbol of the beehive. It really relates to the human organization. But there is a queen involved. Doesn't mean there's no king. But in the satanic trinity, it's a king, a queen, and their son. That's what it is, folks. It's a king and a queen and her son. And the serpent involves all three of them in one way or another. When you see a white serpent, you've seen these pictures of Madonna and so forth, the singer. She has this white serpent with her. That's the son. She's telling you, I'm taking in my hands and on my body the Antichrist. There's a lot of things that go on, I'll tell you, in entertainment and movies today that are there because they want us to see them. And it's all connected in one way or another with the Jewish Kabbalah. The Jewish Kabbalah. Albert Pike, who wrote the 19th century book Morals and Dogma, told us that at the very base of Freemasonry, all of the 33 rituals of the Freemasonry religion, and that's what it is, a religion, come out of the Kabbalah. They all come out of the Kabbalah, the system of magic in the Judaic religion. Well, let's go to the beehive to the Borg. Now, the Borg is a new science fiction term. What does it mean, the Borg? That's B-O-R-G. When everything is connected together, whenever there's a universal mind that connects together, we know that as the Borg. That's what their real goal is, to connect everything together. That's why we have Facebook. Over 1 billion people around the world on Facebook. They mean to get everybody linked in, interconnected with all of these social networking. That's the meaning of this on the internet today. So whether you're from India or Africa or Europe or the United States, you'll be linked together. You'll be interconnected. You'll be part of the Borg. And the Borg will have its father and its mother. And of course, their son, the Antichrist. Are you a member of the Borg? That's the question. If you want to get off the grid, if you don't want to have anything to do with the Borg, well, you're going to fight the system. They're determined to put together the beehive. If you take a look at the apron that the Masons have, every Grand Master of the Masonic Lodge has an apron, and many of them have the beehive and the bee as one of their symbols in Freemasonry. By the way, as part of the Borg, you're going to have a biochip. Everybody has to have a biochip. That'll put you instantly in contact with all the other members of the Borg. And you've got to have, well, a universal healthcare system. That's part of the Borg. So we're all going to be connected with this global central computer. And we'll be part of the beehive and part of the Borg. Well, one of the things that the Mormon church has is the word Mormon. A lot of people want to know, where did the word Mormo or Mormon come from? If you ask a Mormon, they really don't know. Now, at the very top, they do. And Mormon scholars do know. But the average Mormon doesn't know. So I set forth to do a little study on it. Where did the word Mormo come from? Well, According to Anton LaVey, the head of the Church of Satan, he knew about Mormo. In the Satanic Bible, Mormo is the king of the ghouls. He's the consort, the husband, you might say, the queen, the king of Hecate, the witch queen. Isn't that interesting? Let me repeat it again. Anton LaVey of the Church of Satan, in his The Satanic Bible, says that Mormo, M-O-R-M-O, is the king of the ghouls, consort of Hecate. Now, in Greek mythology, Mormo is a Greek word that was a spirit who bit bad children. If you were a bad child, he would come at you in your dreams. He was a demon spirit. He was a companion of the goddess Hecate. He was, in fact, a female vampire-like creature. Have you ever wondered why vampires are so popular today? Here we have a woman vampire named Mormo. I think Joseph Smith was pretty fanciful, wasn't he? But Joseph Smith, in fact, was a Freemason. I'll give you evidence of that in just a moment. And his whole religion was based on the fact that he had this visit from an angel, Moroni, or Moroni. And where does the word Moroni come from? Well, that turns out to be the ghost of a pirate, a thief. But that's another story. Let's just go to the Greek mythology, Mormo. So we have these children way back in ancient days that were told this story about the vampire woman, Mormo, the demon god. And the mothers would tell the little kids back then, if you misbehave, Mormo will come and get you. So I think the same way today. If you misbehave, well, Mormons will sure come and get you, all right. And by the way, the Mormon church has such a clean aspect to it, doesn't it? I mean, it is so, well, homogenized, pasteurized, so clean. Did you know that there is more murder, graft, corruption? The actual crime statistics show there's more crime, murderous crime, in Salt Lake City than almost any other city in the whole United States. Oh, I thought it was a nice, clean place. I did not know. I mean, they don't have any blacks there. It's only the blacks that do crime in America, isn't it? Not if you're in Salt Lake City, done by the white people, the Mormons. Remember Elizabeth Smart was kidnapped by a Mormon? Well, remember that other family? I forget their name now. The wife was first missing, then it turned out that the father of the husband was claiming he was having an affair with her. Then he was arrested for child pornography. Then meanwhile, the husband took the two little boys ahead and killed them and set his house afire. They never did find the body of the wife. The Mormons have a lot to do with wickedness and corruption. And as I just said, there's more crime. I mean, if you get this, the FBI statistics, I did myself just a couple of months ago. I wanted to make sure of this because all of the Mormon missionaries told me there's more crime in the Mormon cities in Utah than there is in any place in the United States. And I think Salt Lake City was second among all the cities of the United States. That'll tell you a little bit about the crime, won't it? In Salt Lake City. In any case, there's all kinds of references to Mormo in popular cinema, for example. In the 2007 movie Stardust, there was an evil witch named Mormo. Isn't that interesting? An evil witch named Mormo. And then there's also, I understand, a role-playing video game called Tales of the World, where the character Mormo is a flying cat that's evil. And it goes on and on. Well, I can tell you all about the Mormo references. Mormo. Well, let's talk about the Masonic roots of Mormonism, the Masonic roots. Now, Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, admitted to being a Mason in his History of the Church, Volume 4, page 551. Under the date of March 15, 1842, his entry is this, quote, "In the evening I received the first degree in Freemasonry in the Nauvoo Lodge, assembled in my general business office. The very next day in the same book he noted becoming a Master Mason. I was with the Masonic Lodge," he says, "and rose to the sublime degree." Then Dr. Reed Durham, who's president of the Mormon History Association and a Mormon himself, a Mormon scholar, says, quote, "There is absolutely no question in my mind that the Mormon ceremony, which came to be known as the endowment," that's when you become a Mormon, "introduced by Joseph Smith to Mormon Masons, had an immediate inspiration from Masonry. It is also obvious that the Nauvoo in Illinois temple architecture was Masonically influenced, and there was an intentional attempt to utilize Masonic symbols and motifs." Well, of course, that's true. There was the sun signs and the moon signs and all of the other signs that you see in Freemasonry. And there it was in the Mormon temple. You'll also see the satanic pentagram on the floor. Walk into the Mormon temple. Take one of their, you know, guided tours when you get to Salt Lake City. Go to the Great Temple. And you'll see the satanic pentagram on the floor. I don't know what the tour guides say. If you walk in and go, whoa, there's the sign of Satan, they'll probably escort you out. But there it is, right on the floor. You walk across it when you go into the temple. And there's many other things in there too. I can tell you that. Well, in any case, many of the same signs in Mormonism, the signs of their rituals, for example, the first token of the Aaronic priesthood, you know, are the same as Freemasonry. In fact, the very moment that Joseph Smith died, he was actually murdered when he was in jail awaiting a trial. He cried out, "Is there no help for the widow's son?" That's when he died, after he was shot. He cried out. He put his arms in the grand hailing sign of Freemasonry. The grand hailing sign. And he cried out, "Is there no help for the widow's son?" The widow's son. That is a Masonic symbol of great importance. Well, I've run out of room today, run out of time. Hope I've helped you a little bit learn about some of the Freemasonry inside the Mormon Church. By the way, the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, known as the Jehovah's Witnesses, also teach that God resides on the star, a cyclone in the Pleiades constellation, and from this star he has governed the universe. This was based up until 1953 in Volume 3 of their studies in the Scriptures. Yes, God resided on the star, a cyclone. Not, well, okay. This is Tex Mars, friends, reminding you, stay with the Holy Bible. You can't go wrong. Stay with the New Testament. Stay with Jesus Christ. Well, tune in each week during the same time and discover the power of prophecy.